to continue on with something and finish it. I don't know if you can really finish this this topic dealing with part of the armor of God. I decided I was going to try to put something. I wasn't going to wear it, but I had those pieces of equipment that I used for years. It really hits me. It has a bit more impact because I can kind of relate to that so much easier with all of the pieces of equipment that I had to use. Not all sports have those. Football probably has it in a certain sense, although they don't have the protective equipment really on the legs. Some have certain pads to help cover their thighs, but the legs are left open. Playing the sport of hockey, I was pretty much covered. In fact, that's why I kept my skates for so long. Used to have a leather boot. They've changed that now. The equipment has become much lighter. They've got Kevlar and other things that are able to be a little bit more protective and lighter as well. The equipment in the past was leather. Once that got wet, it got really heavy. We used to also wear a leather boot for the skate. And if the puck would hit you in that boot, it was very painful, especially if it hit that bone in your ankle. And it would cause that foot to swell up, and there's not much you could do but kind of endure that pain. If you took your foot out of that skate, you wouldn't be able to get it back in because of the swelling. So they adapted. In about 1973, they came out with a new skate that was more of a heavy, more of a plastic-type shell. That I could get hit in the foot and I couldn't feel that. It was really very protective. So I actually kept that skate and have those to this day. That's why one of the last times I played, I think it was back maybe in 2008 when I first got here, I was playing a little bit in Knoxville. And the referee looked at me and he goes, "Your skates ought to be in the Smithsonian." So that's how old they are. But they were always protective and my foot still fit in those. So I never knew a skate because I bought those all the way back in 1973. That's an old skate that still lasted. But I also saw the need again for protective equipment for the helmet. In fact, the one year I went without a face guard is when I got a stick through my mouth. And thankfully it didn't shatter my teeth. So I realized the difference when you are wearing equipment and you're not. And Paul used that analogy back in Ephesians to recognize the need to wear that spiritual equipment. And so this one I'm talking about today has to do with that, the loins girt with truth. In my field of that sport, hockey, you would wear a type of pant that would go down to your knees, and it would also go up to about your ribs. And then when he covers the breastplate of righteousness, we also have what was called a shoulder pad that would go down really to where that pant level was. So everything was pretty much protected. And it was the same case when you saw the Roman legions. And that equipment also developed over the years when you see different years when the Roman army would kind of advance in their equipment. So sometimes that would change. But there was a necessity to have all that equipment to be covered to shield someone from, you know, any of the battles that they were in. And Paul, again, used that because the people saw that at that time. For those of you that have watched sports, you see, again, different equipment that's being used at different times and the necessity to go ahead and use that. Now, I look back at a movie, and I won't recommend this, but because I can't remember how much was in there. I think there was maybe some vulgar language in this movie, but it was a movie that starred Tom Cruise and also Jack Nicholson, and it portrayed a court scene for the most part in which the colonel who was over in Guantanamo was being accused of ordering a code red, which was illegal. And so it was Tom Cruise's job to prove that he had done this code red on a soldier because the code red had actually killed him. The punishment that the soldier got for whatever it was, he was actually trying to get out of the army because he couldn't measure up with the standards that this colonel would have at Guantanamo Bay. So he ordered the code red, the soldier died, now it was up to Tom Cruise to prosecute and to see if he could actually pull the truth out of him The man's ego was portrayed quite well by Nicholson in the movie because he finally gets to the point where he challenges him, really makes him mad, and he spits out the truth that indeed he did do the code red. So he was looking for that, took that challenge, and pulled it out. But it was interesting to see Jack Nicholson's reply to him. He said, "Son, have you ever done this? Have you ever guarded a battle?" Therefore, he used that justification to do what he did, even though he didn't say it. Finally, he did, which he was eventually prosecuted. But he says, I want to know the truth. And the colonel's reply is, you can't handle the truth. And then he proceeded to talk about codes and about honor. And when you think about that response, there really was no honor. He was so far apart from the truth that he couldn't see himself, that he wasn't following to an honor and a standard that was provided by him from the military. So he took his position to go, well, guess what? I can break the rules based on my rules. And it was such a dichotomy, in a sense, to see all of the things he spilled about truth and honor, and yet he was lying, and there's no honor in that. So it's interesting to watch that, because a lot of people will, you know, purport to do certain things. We live in a world where people will justify what they do based on their positions of responsibility. We see it in governments all the time. And it seems like no one ever gets prosecuted for these type of things, which is frustrating to much of us when you see people so-called getting away with it. But my question is, do you think that they're really getting away with it? No, they're not. We know a judgment day is coming, and people will not be getting away with this. And that's the truth that we know and understand. We just have to deal with these situations right now. But the thing is, are we wearing that armor as well? It's important for us to understand that. And there's lots of analogies that are used within the Bible, metaphors and other things. Paul uses this back in Ephesians. We went back to Ephesians chapter 6. It's important for us to understand what Paul did say in verse 12, so I'd like to refresh our memories on this once again, because this is the battle that we have. It seems that Satan's attacks are intensifying. For us, for all of us, I believe that we understand that and know that as we proceed toward the end times, the intensity will pick up. So it's no surprise that we are seeing that in the world that we live in today. And yet things go on, people go back and forth, and that's what the Bible says in the end time. People will be marrying, giving in marriage, and nobody will really be watching except for those that understand and know the truth. So we weigh what's happening now against what the Scripture says. These battles are spiritual battles, and that's why Paul talked about this protective armor that we're supposed to be using. He said in verse 12, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities." So this really is, once again, as we saw the trial that came upon us over a year ago, this was not a flesh and blood type scenario. This was testing and dealing with attitudes, with spiritual things that we are looking through the physical. Although we did analyze physical things and still are, but for us, it's more of a spiritual battle. It had the possibility of dividing even God's people. That's what I was watching, and that's why I was so grateful for the response of at least the brethren that I served. Against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. So it's not some physical or corporate battle. We must possess the insight to be able to see how much deeper than this. Remember the vision that we're supposed to have. So when all this was happening, say a trial comes upon us, and again, even Mr. Franks mentioned what happened to us back in 2009 and 2010, how that really, you could look upon it as a corporate battle, but no, it was Satan attacking, and still does. It went much deeper than that. So sometimes you would have to ask yourself, as so many of the ministers that I knew were asking the brethren to pray for discernment, because it wasn't just physical things, it was a deeper spiritual thing that was taking place. And I believe I might have mentioned this to you already, but we had a staff member who came to camp that talked about the battle that he had with the issue that we just dealt with. And he said he really was, in a sense, against the ruling that had taken place in the church that we're required to wear masks. And I know it was a challenge again for all of us. It was a challenge for me as well. I'm so grateful now when we sing hymns to be able to sing out. I'm very thankful for that. But it was a test in a sense of attitudes as well. And this person said, I was really challenged by that. He really didn't feel that he had a very good attitude toward it. Felt like he was right in so many different ways. But he went on his knees and he asked God for discernment to show him. And he said, so interesting, but because the next day when he woke up, he had a whole different view of what took place. And it was really neat to see that attitude, how it changed his view, that it was a spiritual battle. It wasn't just a physical one. And it changed his mind. And so that's something for us to see as well, that God would give us the discernment and the vision to see what the truth is on any matter. And I would call it sometimes when you're talking about this protective equipment that pretty much goes from the ribs down, the breastplate of righteousness. Okay, we'll touch that on that a little bit later. But this part here goes over the very important packed with organs that we have down to the loin area as well, covering some pretty significant parts within the body. And sometimes we'll use those. We'll say, sometimes you've heard of, what is your gut feeling on this? You know, it's interesting. What is your gut? What does your loins tell you? What's your gut tell you? And so many times, you know, God gives us the discernment. Sometimes we're wondering, and I would ask myself so many times, because again, I think it's the women so many times that are gifted with the ability to discern more than men. It's not across the board that way, but I know my wife has always questioned hers. So many times she's had these gut feelings about something that end up coming true, and I've learned to rely and trust in that. She doesn't want to feel that way because it causes her to wonder about certain things, and she doesn't want to feel like that. But again, sometimes God can lead us and guide us in certain things that we've got to protect that. We've got to protect what God is telling us about the truth. Do you know, it's interesting when you go back to Genesis and you see what Eve was dealing with at the time that she was challenged by Satan. Has God really told you this? If you would ask her in the future, you know, what was your gut feeling at the time? You know, you kind of thought about that, but you removed that part of your equipment and you let Satan come in and challenge the truth. Your gut should have told you something was wrong here because God said this, and you're coming more with a piece of information that I know is not correct, but everything else, the appeal looked so good to her and that she bought it. It was, again, it ended up being not a physical one. It ended up being a spiritual battle that she had to cast away those thoughts. And those are important for us today. You know, we're called to battle. This is not easy. It's not onward Christian sojourners, is it? It's onward Christian soldiers. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, this is the battle that we run. When everybody else is wearing that equipment, and frankly, I don't watch much sports anymore, but it's so interesting how much this world is vested into this. It seems to be one thing after another all the time. There's always going to be some kind of tournament out there. Somebody's going to be battling for some kind of crown, whether it's tennis, whether it's golf, whether it's car racing, whether it's all these different sports that come into play, and so many just last for so long. Because it used to be in my field of sports, you only had 6 hockey teams really in pro sports back in the 60s. Now you've got over 30, which really extends the season a long way. But they all strive for something called the Stanley Cup. You know, that's the mastery. That's what they strive for. And it's so interesting as we look at the battle that we go for. This is irrelevant before God. The Stanley Cup will eventually go somewhere. Who knows where that will ever be. But when God returns to judge the earth, no Stanley Cup will be brought out. But we will be rewarded against the battles that we fought. In 1 Corinthians 9, verse 25, Paul said, "And everyone who strives for the mastery, for the endeavor, is self-restrained in all things." Now, society does it to obtain a corruptible crown, trophies, rings, medals, ribbons. But we strive to obtain an incorruptible crown. So he says, therefore, I run not as uncertainly. So he used this in a sense as a race. I run not as uncertainly, so fight I not as one that beats the air. We know exactly what we're doing. We know this purpose. So when these come on the scene again in the future, if it's not going to be one thing, it'll be another. Satan will continue to attack, and especially his people, trying to divide his church. We've got to recognize that first and recognize our part and how we deal with these things, because so many had lost track of that, lost the vision that they had, and Satan got a hold of them and took them and divided them. You know, there are just a few left when you think about it. When you think about the battles that we've had to endure for many years now. I mean, going all the way, it just seemed like things were running pretty smooth. You know, there were times, as Mr. Franks brought out, when even the church out in Pasadena was attacked, the church as a whole, taken over by the governor at that time. God endured, you know, provided relief in that. We had to get through that one where the church was attacked, and then there were others along the way as well. But it caught, I remember, Mr. Armstrong's attention, and there was a time there in the early 80s when, you probably remember, he talked about putting the church back on track again, because Satan got in with his ways, and he says, we got to take another look at this because we started to water down God's word again. There was something called STP that came out, the Standard Theology Project, which came around again, by the way, later, and even more in depth and harder. So it was a time that people had to get through, took people away, divided the ministry at that time. Many blocks of ministers went on their own way to propagate these lies that were in there, mixed with truth. But when it's mixed with truth, it still ends up being a lie, doesn't it? God is looking for the full truth. When somebody had mentioned before, you've got to go, because he was using this, in a sense, to justify why people should go with his group. And his response was, you have to go where the full truth is being preached. And my question back is, where is that? Do we have the full truth? You know, we preach and teach what we know about the full truth. I don't believe that we have it all yet. We're striving for it, aren't we? We're looking for it, we're searching for it, and God blesses us as we do that search. But we've come a long way, you know, in what the truth was. We've made changes along the way as we found out that we made errors and mistakes. And so it's a growth process that we have an understanding. And once we know that truth, though, the Bible talks about holding fast to it. You know, our theme from last year, holding fast to what is true, not letting go, you know, appreciating what we have. And understanding, again, we don't run with uncertainty. Paul said, you know, I know precisely who I am. I know my calling, my responsibility to others and to God. I know where I am going and how I am getting there. We're just imperfect. And sometimes, again, we have to realize sometimes we may be missing a part of that equipment that we weren't wearing. You know, I remember every game, I would have my things my dad taught me when I would bring my equipment back home. I had an equipment bag, and I would take it all off, and I would hang it up. Otherwise, there it is. You're stuffed into an equipment bag. Number one, it's going to really smell pretty bad, and some of that equipment being leather is going to rot because it got wet. So I was taught to go ahead and hang it up. And I knew before that next game, I knew what all my equipment was supposed to be. I had to get this piece and that piece, and there was an order to it. Because if I went to that game missing a piece of that equipment, normally I couldn't play. I remember one time I went without elbow pads. I chanced that. But you see, if my elbow went down on that ice, I probably could have broken my elbow. But I chanced not doing those. Sometimes somebody would carry maybe some extra equipment. But there's not much else when you were playing that sport that you could leave behind. You needed all of it. And somebody that wanted to try that, didn't work so well for them. Again, we know who we are, what we have to do, what we have to wear. And that's the thing to review when Paul is talking about this. So let's consider the words of Peter concerning this most important responsibility carried out by a true Christian. In 1 Peter chapter 2, 1 Peter chapter 2, you'll hear me and have heard me quote this so many times, one of my favorite scriptures, because there's a lot of meat to it here. You know, as we fought against all these battles in the past, we look at those. It was hard. I remember how difficult it was, and it's still a little bit, I would say, aggravating to me, because what was done with what Satan lashed out with divided, I'll call it my family. As you've heard, Mr. Holmes says that a lot. He talks about family, and it really is. And when I look back, when I came into, we call it, you came into what? The truth. God allowed us to see, to come into the truth. We called it the truth. So there are certain coin words that we used and understanding what the truth was. Well, so many of those people back in my hometown, I felt, understood the truth as well. I felt like one family. And then Satan cast out his darts. And you know what happened? A lot of people were missing their equipment. They missed that part of their armor called truth because they allowed these attacks to come in. And it was so unusual because when people started saying, well, you don't really have to do that. You don't have to keep that. You don't really have to do that. Christ came and did away with that. And they bought the lie that came in. They allowed that piece of equipment to be missing. And for most of us, all of us here, I would say, you had a gut feeling that something was amiss. When you go back and revisit that, something was amiss when that minister who basically you trusted to get up there and tell you the truth was saying things that you knew didn't coincide with what the Bible said. Something's fishy here. Something doesn't match up. And along with that came these other lies, didn't they? Because they would say, well, we're not changing anything. Oh, no, you did. You are changing things. And eventually, people just started biting off these little bits of it until they swallowed the whole thing, and they're gone. And what was aggravating about that, in a sense, to me, is I love those people, and I still do. But they're not a part of this family anymore. They took off that equipment, and it happened again and again. And so I see what Satan has done. And yes, it's aggravating, I think, to anybody that goes through some of these divisions and splits, even on both sides of it, because some would say, well, I don't feel like I had anything to do with that. I would personally say that sometimes myself. I didn't do anything. I came home, and this is what I came home to. It just happened. And I simply, and you were simply left with a choice that you had to make. But we had to figure out, what's your gut feeling saying here? What really is the truth of the situation? And that's been challenged. And it will be challenged, by the way, again. And it's going to be harder. And it's going to be more subtle, probably, in all probability. Because there are some of those things that, you know, some people say, well, if I ever heard that again, I'd stand up and walk out. I wouldn't wait anymore when you heard that. Some would change, maybe, in the things that they would react to and do. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9 says, you're a chosen generation, a royal priesthood. These are the things to come. A holy nation. This is what God is preparing us for. A peculiar or purchased people. God redeemed us, it says, by his blood. See, the rest of the world isn't yet, because in order to accept that sacrifice, as we do every year at Passover, we've got to accept that sacrifice of Jesus Christ, requiring changes. It's called repentance. And that's the one that Satan the devil has foisted upon most of this world, that you don't really have to do that. Just basically come as you are. We understand the truth about that. And the battle is hard. This has not been an easy road. But I would say, in another sense, knowing the truth and going the other way is going to be just as difficult, if not more difficult as well. Because if you don't follow the truth, other things are going to happen as well along the road that have hurt a lot of people, that have caused a lot of people to suffer in agony. And most of this world is suffering in agony because they don't understand. They don't have the truth. We do. So we're that purchased people, but then there's the requirement here that you should show forth, that you should reflect that light or manifest the praises, the virtues of him. We went through that. How many virtues? There's hundreds, really, of virtues. You can find them scattered throughout the Bible. You can see them reflected in the fruits of God's Spirit and the love, joy, peace, long-suffering. Those are all the virtues. There are others as well that God deals with. that you can find throughout the Bible, the virtues of God, that when people see us, and once again, as sad as it was to lose that camp, it was really nice to hear that note that we were a reflection. They were very sad to say we couldn't come, but they saw how we took care of that camp. And that's important for us to shine as lights. That will never change. Why? Because it's who we are. It's not something that you just do. It's something that you become. It's something that it comes naturally to you. We still fight some of those battles. Does everyone here have a great hold on patience yet? Are we at the top of 100% of it with patience? God will sometimes smile and he goes, well, if they think they are, then I'm going to take them to the next level, to the next step, and show this is a work that we have to constantly do. But we do grow, don't we? We do grow in patience. Hopefully, we do grow in gentleness. As Paul said in that letter where he talked about those virtues, he says, against there is no such law. You can never have enough love. You can never have enough gentleness. You can never have enough kindness. But it's something that we search for, that we take on. And we take that on by having that armor because Satan wants to pierce that. He wants to test our patience. He wants us to blow. So we don't reflect those virtues. Who has called you out of darkness, it says, into his marvelous light, that light of understanding the truth. Who in the time past were not people, but now are the people of God. For some that have grown up in the church, it's a little bit more difficult until you're a bit older and you look back and you see how God has transformed your life as well. But for people, and many here, that were not called into the church, it's kind of a reflection to see what you were before and what you've become and what you are now, who in time past were not the people of God, who had not yet obtained mercy, but now have. And so he said, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims from this earth, from this world, we know to become separated from this, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul. That's the spiritual battle once again. Verse 12, it says, having your conduct, your behavior honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, that will come as well. I've been called that. You've been called that so many different times. And God says, you know, blessed are you when somebody does that. I have to remember that as well. When somebody takes you down or tries to take you, wait a second, you know. God says, if I handle that well, it really is a blessing. It's something that, but it's hard. It's hard to take those, I call them cheap shots. I got those back when I played that game as well. Cheap shots, they were called. I was tested, and I remember that. Because what I didn't want to do was be penalized, because my whole job, my whole perspective was to go out there and take that little disc and put it and beat that goalie and put the puck in the net. You can't do that when you're sitting on the bench being penalized. And I use that to teach my children as well on something called retaliation. You'll see that many times. You've seen that many times, maybe if you remember the guy, I won't bring out his name, but he played tennis. You probably remember the guy. What? For the bad example that he said. He would throw his racket. He would curse at the referee. He became known as that. They called him a great basketball coach. And I think they were finally done with him, either when he hit somebody or he tossed a chair out onto the court in front of the entire world to see, and they called him a great coach. I wouldn't call that a great coach because he won a lot of games. That's not how you set the example. That's not what a sport is all about, but that's where it became. And for many, and by the way, in God's church, when I came into the truth and I watched some church basketball games, I would tell people I played in better, more reasonable amateur hockey games than I played in church basketball tournaments. And some of those I recognized were on the ministers who had attitudes that were displayed in front of all the people over a game. That's where it became. So the tests are out there. They're going to be out there in sports. They'll be there in music, by the way. Some take on attitudes, even within music. And I've recognized and tried to bring it up that, you know, music is what's called, it's an art. So it's subjective, isn't it? We can all sit here and go through these hymns, and some of us will say, I really like that one. And somebody else will go, well, I really don't like that one. It's so interesting, as I was talking to somebody who was a former young ambassador some months ago, and I had mentioned, I go, you know, I really like that song. And she had replied, I didn't really like that song. And I, you know, it challenged me a little bit. I kind of go, well, really? Well, how come you don't like that song? Everybody should like that song. I like that song. She didn't like it. And I had to remember, music is subjective. Somebody will look at a picture. I like that picture. I really don't like that picture. I like that color. I really don't like that color. It's subjective. And thankfully, God gives us all these different flavors and different colors and varieties and different personalities that we take a look at that can be challenged, by the way. What is the truth? The truth is that it's a perspective. And if we all see that truth, there's a difference between the flavors and varieties, but there aren't different flavors and varieties of truth. I'll read that a little bit later as I close. So these are the battles that war against the soul. Again, look what it says here in finishing verse 12, that they may behold by your good examples, which they will behold, glorify God in the day of judgment, the day of inspection. They won't remember it now. You may not get kudos now, but they'll remember you. Oh, you are those people. You kept that. You did that. And they'll remember how we handle things. Well, you did have honor. You didn't have vile things come out of your mouth in response. You did not retaliate. You took the hit. So that's why Paul said to endure. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, in this letter, which Paul followed up with from his corrective 1 Corinthians letter, 2 Corinthians chapter 10 was an encouraging reminder to them about overcoming and about growing. And the people of Corinth did because of Paul's help. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 3, once again, he points this out kind of in conjunction with what he pointed out in Ephesians as well with that spiritual battle that we fight. In verse 3, he said, "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds." So if we can make this connection here as best as you can, maybe I ought to bring my equipment and you can all try it on sometime. You know, it's so interesting. If you understand the importance of that equipment, and you can take it to the spiritual level, this is important what Paul was talking about. Because a lot of people, if you want to pull off one piece of equipment that took a lot of people down, they took off their helmet. It's called the helmet of salvation. Once they bought the lie, then they lost the calling. And that's important for all of us, to never lose that. To never lose what God has given us here, 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 the whole part. Some people have said that, well, the work's basically done. I don't know if you probably heard that before. Herbert Armstrong came, proclaimed a message, and it was a good message. It was an influential message. I still remember the radio broadcast, as many of you do. I still remember the channel that it came on, CHYR out of Leamington, Ontario. Still remember the commercial that came on before it. Still remember the message that was a different message. That when people ask you, by the way, as it's been done to me, I've just resigned myself to the fact when somebody asks me, well, what church do you belong to? Well, we're non-denominational. And they want to get, then you say Church of God, but I want to be careful on Church of God because there's a Pentecostal Church of God that's based out of Cleveland. So, we're non-charismatic. But there's more to that. So I basically just have said, in some cases, I've said, well, do you remember a man named Herbert Armstrong and the Plain Truth magazine? And I'm really surprised sometimes of the positive responses I've got. Oh, yeah, I remember that guy. They remembered a different message. And now that message is what? Been watered down because you're getting messages all over the place. And you can analyze that because I'll hear some good messages. There are some really good speakers out there. And you hear some good messages about Christian living. And they get to a certain point and go, ah, they don't totally understand that. It's really not the truth as we understand it. When it comes down to something as simple as the Sabbath day, it's like they know everything else. They know things about Revelation. They know about the mark of the beast. But they don't know about the Sabbath day? So interesting. But others know about the Sabbath day as well. There's other Sabbath keepers, but they don't know other parts of it either. And I understand that we don't have necessarily the whole and full truth, but we have enough within our smaller congregations to understand about the plan of salvation and how to get to that point. And maybe God won't give us everything in this age. There are people that have died. Mrs. Armstrong, if you remember, died before we changed Pentecost to Sunday, where we keep it now. So is God going to say, sorry? I don't think that's the way God works. She kept the full truth to the best that she could to the day that she died, and I believe that she's going to have her reward. God had a purpose, and he does for all of us as well. So we don't war after the flesh. The warfare, weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. Verse 5, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. Now, verse 5 there, what part of the equipment would that relate to? I'm not talking about that part today. Casting down imaginations, that's talking about the head. That's talking about the thoughts. That's talking about the brain. That's talking about the helmet. And so those thoughts that enter into us, no, I'm not going to go there. And if some people would have thought about this when this last trial came on, maybe it wouldn't have been maybe as difficult. Because I simply mentioned, there have been judgments that have been made in the past, right, in the church. I mentioned some of those. There are always judgments that are being made. Where the feast is going to be. Where God chooses to place his name is a judgment in the church based off the law of God. Based off of, we are going to go to the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, where does God choose to place his name? So if the ministry is serious, which I believe that they are, then the ministerial coordinators for the feast are going to get together and ask God to show them. I really believe that. We're going to ask God to show us, and we're going to ask God, show us where you want the next preteen camp to be. I want God's guidance to be in there. Because you put him first, it says he'll add everything else. That's a concept of the truth. So where are we going to have the feast? Judgments are made. Judgment was made on a tithe of tithe. That's not in the Bible, per se. That was a judgment in the church based off the Feast of Tabernacles, based on we save our second tithe. So that doesn't come out of first tithe. We deemed and made a judgment that that tithe of tithe would come out of the second tithe in order to pay for those buildings, in order to help people that couldn't make it to the feast, to give them the assistance. It's worked out every year. Every year when people do that, it's worked out and helped other people out. We've been able to have successful feast sites. Judgments. Then there's another judgment that was made, one that a lot of you, some of you won't remember, some of you will, one called makeup. Remember that one? Makeup. We had to kind of go back and forth on that. And I remember, I'll just say this because I've got an example in my mom, who was a wonderful example to me. Because, she did ask the question, is there anything wrong with making it look like I've got eyebrows? I remember her asking because she had such light hair and then light eyebrows. Was there anything wrong? No, in a sense, there really wasn't anything wrong, but the church had made a judgment at that time. And if you held fast and did and had a good, thankful attitude, then you did wait for God to figure that out, to heal that situation, to make it right. And eventually it happened. But people had to sort through some of those judgments that were sometimes not good calls, if you want to make it, if you want to put it that way. And because that became the spiritual battle then. How am I going to deal with this? Am I going to let this take me out of God's church over that? Am I going to let this take me out of God's church for something I've got to wear over my face? I don't think so. What's our gut feeling say on that? What's the truth say? And that's the part that we have to fight. Casting down the imagination. Every high thing that exalts itself. Well, who are they telling me what to do? Don't they know that these people say this and this and this over here? And other people would say, well, don't they see this and this and this over here? And it came down to, oh, look what's happening. You know what my gut feeling told me? Uh-oh, we got the potential for this to divide God's church over this, which is nothing compared to what we're going to go over through in the future. And I'm so glad I was able to share that, for people to consider that and think about that. How are we going to handle this? How are we going to deal with this? And my mom went through that with flying colors. And what a great example and a good light she was just to our family, if not other people as well. So here it is in verse 6. And bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. And here it is in verse 6. Because sometimes you want to get back. You know what my way when I was playing this sport, you know what my way of getting back would be? Not retaliating and hitting that guy back that just gave me a cheap shot. And sometimes they were painful. I would come off the ice, by the way, and you know how that, I said that pad would kind of match with the pant? Sometimes when you would move, it would just expose a little bit of that. And sometimes I would get hit maybe with a stick, maybe with a puck, and I come off the ice and get undressed, and all of a sudden I'm seeing these welts that are all over me. I'm so caught up in the game that I'm not even thinking of those until I get off, and I'm going, wow, this really hurts. All of a sudden, when you recognize that you had that, that piece was lifted up. You know, when they did that, those cheap shots, oh, you wanted sometimes to get back. You really wanted to clobber them and get them back, and you really had to resist the urge to do that. And thankfully, I was a little bit smarter in being able to do that, so I didn't get penalized very often. I got the cheap shots, but you know a way to get back? Take that little disc and put it into the net. That's getting back. And Paul says the same thing here. Verse 6, having in a readiness to revenge all disobedience, do you want to get back? Did you ever want to get back for your disobedience? I really wish I could. I wish I didn't do that a long time ago. When I look back before I was called, that's why I told you I don't like high school reunions, because they remember some of those things that I don't want to remember, that God says, I've forgiven all that. And I'm always will be a reminder to people that would bring, I'll go, God's forgiven all that. Why do we continue to bring that up? And I look back, I wish I wouldn't have done that. I remember one young gal in elementary school, all these kids, if they go to school, public school, what a challenge that they have. You know, they're going to get ridiculed, somebody's going to put them down and really make them feel bad, and we tell the kids that camp, and it's a challenge, because you'll still see that little carnal attitude come out. We go, no, we don't do that here. We treat others with respect. You don't violate their space, poking someone, calling them names, not having that at camp. But it happens sometimes. We've got to correct that and teach the kids the right way, but they're going to get that at school. And I do remember. I remember using the old four eyes. You know, you would call somebody with glasses four eyes. You would call them shorty. We had nicknames for everybody. And I won't tell you my nickname, but anyway, I had a nickname. You know what I'd learned to do? I'd laugh at it. Best thing to do is laugh at it. Because if they know it's going to get to you, they're going to continue to do it, because that's the whole purpose. I want to aggravate somebody. So people had nicknames. You know, so we call people. I remember one guy my brother went to school with, he was tall. So that was his nickname. It was Tall. You know, he didn't mind it. It wasn't really a cutting one per se, but he was tall, so they just called him Tall. Other persons, they would call him Shorty. You've heard those words. They're short, they call him Shorty. Other ones, they call him by their bulk. So you call somebody maybe Fatso or something. And as a kid, yeah, I probably got caught up in that. You know what I hate? How I'm now looking at God's truth and knowing it, the love of God that's there, I wish I would have never said that or hurt somebody. You recognize the extent when you get older. So how can you get your revenge? I get my revenge by teaching these kids. Don't ever do that. Don't ever say that. I get revenge by my obedience. That's the revenge. That's what God wants to see. He says you revenge that when your obedience is fulfilled. You can never do away with that sin. Only Jesus Christ could do that. You can never do away with that, but there is a revenge. It's called obedience. Aha, I got you here now, because I'm not doing that anymore. And I believe I recalled a story some years ago. A man told me that he was working a job as a delivery person. And sometimes he would approach the Sabbath day, and he goes, you know, this guy is telling me to go ahead and make a run when I know it's going to get into the Sabbath day. And he was able to resist that. He was able to resist. And then one day, he took off that piece of equipment, and he allowed it to come in. And sure enough, he got caught up in traffic and it ran him into the Sabbath day. And he thought about that and he said, I am never going to allow that to happen again. That piece was placed firmly on him now. He got his revenge. He repented. He asked God for forgiveness. And it was one of those, I'll never do that again. Do you ever think about that? You made that one mistake and you go, I will never do that again. And you try with all get out with God's Spirit, but sometimes those darts, and sometimes you forgot to put that piece of equipment on, and that dart will come in, and it'll take you down. And so we ask God for forgiveness, and we get up, and we try to see the seriousness of placing this equipment on. So God provides us with the tools to be able to do that, to be able to have that full armor on through the Bible study, through the fasting and meditation and prayer. So that's what Paul talks about. You know, the belt was a critical part of the Roman armor, and everything was held kind of in place by that, or anchored to it. Without the belt, the rest of the armor would lose its effectiveness. You had to have that on. You couldn't just put all the others and leave that one out. In the first step in a Christian's preparation is a foundation of truth. Now, we live in an era where the truth is shunned. Some was once approached in declared too confidently that there was no such thing as absolute truth. The response was, are you absolutely sure? The claim that there is no such thing as truth is a logical contradiction, for if that statement is true, then it also must be false. How can a culture have a foundation based on an assumption that nothing is absolute? Our modern-day culture is building its foundation on a shifting sand. Can't be that way. And the reality hits us more and more and more and more as we look at the examples of smart people. As I said, going all the way up to the Supreme Court of the greatest country on the face of this earth, rules that says two guys can get married. There's no truth about that at all. There's no truth that a guy can become a girl by some kind of physical change, or vice versa. That's truth that no one will ever be able to get into me, and I hope not you would either. No one will be able to convince me of that. But it weeds its way in to your education system, taught at a very young age. So our people start to accept that. They'll throw other lies out that if you don't believe that, you must hate. Where in actuality, it's the exact opposite. No, I love God, and I love my fellow man, and I see the repercussions of what's going to take place when you do that. My culture, my country, my society is going to tank because it's not based on reality. It's not based on truth, and it's painful. It's as painful as going through a division in the church when you see a wonderful country that God blessed us with, that we are truly thankful for the blessings he's given to us. And what we taught the kids at camp, and I heard it, we didn't talk about this together per se in the ministry, but all of us reflect on thanksgiving to God for the blessings he's given to us. Thanksgiving, thank you to the people that made the meals. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for serving me. There was a lot of thank yous that went around at camp, and God blessed that camp with a lot of happiness and a lot of sunshine and a lot of light. And sometimes we can look at things and they get so sorry that sometimes we still forget to thank God for the blessings he's given to us. Having the confidence that we can indeed know what is true provides us with a firm foundation on which to secure our armor and our lives upon. A house built on an unstable foundation is certain to fall. It may stand for a while, but when the foundation is stressed, it cannot stand. What did we just think about? Anybody think about something that happened recently? Give you a hint, Miami. It stood for a while, but then when it's not built, when it's not founded, someone told me about that, it wasn't really built to the standards on which it was supposed to. Now, it's going to stand for a while, but when it fell, I don't know how many people have died throughout that. There were a lot of people missing, but eventually fell. And so there's a spiritual analogy to that. The same is true for our lives. Even those who reject truth appear strong as long as life remains in control. But when everything around us spirals out of control, only those founded upon the rock will stand secure. When the terrorists destroyed the towers in New York in 2001, how many people turned to an atheist for strength or encouragement? Did you know at that time there was a rise in church attendance? There was actually, across the board, there was a rise in church attendance. And slowly after that diminished, because people were thinking, hey, I better get my act together. Things are happening now. And that will happen in the future as well. But God says, and use the parable of the virgins, give us some of your oil now. Too late to change. See, atheism thrives when circumstances are in control. But when the foundations are shaken or lives are in danger, no one converts to atheism for doesn't provide security when people need a foundation. As moral relativism has crept into the church, the foundation of the church has also eroded. Spiritual maturity is not possible without a firm grasp of the truth. And that's why, if you remember seeing Mr. Frank's video, so you believe what? It is important what we believe, what our foundations are. We are instructed by God to take firm hold on the instructions found in God's truth and to not let go, for that's our daily bread. That's our life. In this day and age of subjectivity, it depends on what the meaning of is, as I once heard somebody say. As one former president stated, what did your gut tell you on that one? It depends on what the meaning of is. A president says that. I'm kind of thinking, in my gut, I'm going, something is not right here. Thankfully, that spiritual helmet was on too that did not buy that statement at all. See, is the corruption of the truth any different today than in the days of Jesus Christ? So let's take a look at example, John 18, Christ had to face the same thing. And we try to go through the same principles, by the way, as we addressed this situation for the past year. I remember the words that Mr. Franks tried to encourage the people with. He was worried, by the way, concerned, not worried, but concerned, that a lot of people would get too comfortable staying in their homes for services and saying, well, we can just do the webcast here. And you know what happened? If that took place, now there had to be decisions, judgments made based on the circumstances that were around us, that the team got together, the ministerial board of directors got together and go, we better delay for a while till we get a better handle. On what was going on here. And then again, as we were home and enjoyed it, I enjoyed services at home. We had some people over to accomplish the webcast and got that started. A lot of positive things, but didn't replace the holy convocation that God wants for his church to have. That's still in place. That will always be the truth, that we come together in fellowship in a holy convocation. And some people that have been around for a long time have used Matthew as, well, where two or three are together, gathered together, that's where my name is. That's not church attendance. That's actually referring to making judgments in the church based on God's law, not diverting from God's law. So judgments were made. But people have used that, well, I can gather together in my own home and have a church service. It's not the truth. It's not what God says. And as I said to you, if there's more splits that took place or that will take place in the future, what's your truth? My truth is, some truth is, people are so tired of splits that they say, next time, I'm done. Well, you just relegated yourself to failure then. Because if it happens again, I'm going to find out where the body of Christ is, and I'm going to assemble together on his Sabbath and have a worship service to the best of my ability. Whether it's 2, 3, 4, or 100, or 500, whatever it is, that's what I'm going to do, because that's what the truth says. And we don't divert that based on any kind of circumstance that comes along. John 18, verse 33, Pilate entered into the judgment hall again and called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered him, "Do you say this thing of yourself, or did others tell it to you concerning me?" Once again, we see an example. You want to see an example of how to respond to people? I always say, try to word it with a question. Because sometimes you can tell them your truth, tell them the truth of God as a question, and help them to think about it instead of making a statement. How can I respond to that? How can I respond to somebody saying, well, do you keep the Sabbath day? I do. Do you recognize that anywhere else in the Bible where it says otherwise? Respond with a question and ask God for the wisdom in being able to do that. So here he was confronting Pilate. Pilate said, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priest have delivered to me. What have you done?" So he's all into politics. Was Jesus into politics? Absolutely not. Did Jesus have anything to do with the Roman system of government at that time? Did he tell his people to get involved, to cast your vote, even if that could be done? What did he say? He said, that's man's world. We're not in man's world. It says we're not supposed to live. We do have to abide in this society. But when it comes down, anybody want to deal with this government? I realize it's hopeless unless this nation would repent. That's the spiritual battle that we're fighting. Can't change anything. And I appreciate the people that have good moral values and don't like what's happening today too. But the idea is, well, if we just get more votes out, we'd be able to kind of bring it back into a better thing. No, it's not going to be better because the sins of this nation have not changed. They still accept the same-sex marriage. They still accept the aborting of fetuses. They still accept a lie. All those are accepted. They're the norms. So Jesus in verse 36 says, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight? And they will. And they will. You and I included, at the return of Jesus Christ. We will fight. It'll be nice to be spirit beings by that time, won't it? Because you won't have to worry about getting cut, hurt, or whatever. That time will be ours. I told you before, it's our turn. It's our time to lead and to show this world how to live according to God's laws. He says, but now my kingdom is not from this time. It's not of the Jews, nor of the Romans. Modern Christianity believes that the kingdom is in one's heart. But what does that mean? And is that true? Jeremiah 17, verse 9. Let's go here. I know we know this, but let's go here. And you already did this, but I didn't want you to turn out of John 18. So if you remember that, we'll go back there really quick. But this statement fits right here. In Jeremiah 17, verse 9, you'll recognize this. The heart is deceitful. Jeremiah 17 and verse 9. The heart is deceitful above all and desperately wicked. Who can understand it? Who can really understand how bad it can get? Verse 10, I, the Lord, search the heart. I try the reins, even to give every man according to his ways, and according to the fruit of his doings. Judgment day is on the scene. And he judges us now and tries us to take us to that next level. I think about that even physically. I even think about that physically. Why do things hurt so much now? Because if you do a life of sitting and driving and sitting at a desk and driving, the body's going to get out of shape. It's just the way it works. So even this world will tell you, get more exercise, need more exercise. Try to stretch a little bit. I groan when I stretch. I've got a helper that's helping me get through this, and he's putting me through some stretches, and I'm groaning. I'm going, oh, and he's kind of going, uh-huh, uh-huh. my body's not going to do that, but I'd love to be able to touch my toes. I never was able to touch my toes. If I can touch my toes, I've been working really hard to get to that point. And I would love to do that. Well, that's on the physical level. What about the spiritual level? I wanted to get to a point where that's not going to bother you anymore. You've got that one down. You've got that one handled. And there's always something within our lives that we've got to take a look at. Verse 37 back in John 18. Verse 37. And this is the help. We're going to get to the point where you're going to get some help, which we all need. John 18, verse 37. So Pilate said to him, are you a king then? So Jesus answered, you say I'm a king. For this purpose was I born, and for this cause I came into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone that is of the truth hears my voice. But he only told it, and he was only calling a few people, and he was only calling some then. Though the church grew, in numbers at that time because he was bearing witness, bore witness to his disciples, became apostles to go out into all the world and make disciples of all nations, but not everybody. And you and I understand that piece of the truth. So you realize you can go so far. You can try to dress it up, make it look really good, explain it to the best of your ability, but unless God is calling, it's going to go over their head. We recognize what God is doing. That's the truth. Pilate didn't get it. He said, what is the truth? What is truth? So here was a man caught up in the politics of that time. Do you think it was like what we go through now in our system of government now? No doubt. The senators were being bribed and bought out. He saw that people were being put in places of prominence because of who they knew, not because what they could do. That's been the history of mankind. He was facing that right then. What did he tell his disciples? I want you to get in, stir the people up, and get this government out of here. Wasn't his purpose. He knew what was going to happen. He knew that Roman Empire would eventually fall and then come back up again in the end time. So what's the truth today? I just have a couple questions. And you know all these. Is homosexuality natural? Is premarital sex good? Is abortion a God-given choice? Are astrologers / fortune tellers acceptable? Is there truth about Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny? Does Coke add life? If certain ingredients are found in nature, is it okay to eat them? We got to face all kinds of these questions that come up that a lot of people would say yes. It's FDA approved. Even our own government will say that. When I go into a grocery store and see 3/4 of that food is probably not edible because of all the processing. And my proof is, look around us. Even we personally have been affected physically. And we strive. I try to read labels. But it's so hard to find. And the frustration is for a lot of God's people. It's so hard to find good food. It is. It's a challenge. But it's a worthwhile endeavor to put in food that your body's going to recognize and make you a little bit more healthy because we're fighting a downhill battle anyway with the environment being polluted, with your water being polluted. I look at the water test and the water quality and going, this stuff is in the water? And so then they put it in bottles. I don't know if that's really spring water or not. And how about the plastic in the bottle? Does it absorb any of that toxin as well? How can you even eat good? It's a challenge that God's people have to fight, even physically. We get help. John 15, verse 26. John 15, verse 26. And this is where the point comes in of the work that we have to do to recognize this. You remember, we've quoted 2 Timothy chapter 4 as you go to John 15 here, but Paul knew that the time would come, and he says that they will not endure sound doctrine. After their own lust, they will heap themselves teachers having itching ears. What an itching ears time that we're in. How many times, even within the greater churches of God, can you go on the internet and find somebody? Well, I like this person because he speaks really well. So I'm going to go over here. I'm going to listen to him over here. I'm going to listen to them over here. And that's what happens. We're in a day and age when they do that. They'll turn their ears away from the truth, Paul said to Timothy, and they'll be turned to fiction. They'll be turned to fables. Well, yeah, you can stay at home. I mean, one of the basic things right there, just really? You think you can stay home when God calls it a commanded assembly? Wow. John 15, verse 26, when the Comforter has come, which I will send you from the Father, the Spirit of truth, which proceeds from the Father, it will bear record of me. And it does to this day. We just simply have to stir it up. When we have an understanding of the truth in Scripture, our spiritual lives will be secure and able to stand against all the darts. Many claim to be of God, claim to have spiritual revelations, but through truth we are able to discern what is of God and what's of error, and that's through the Spirit of God. That's what gives you the gut. That's what gives you the spiritual discernment. And you can ask for more of it. You can have more of that. That's all you have to do is ask. Just like that one staff member asked. And it was like a light bulb. The light turned on. And he asked for it. And God gave him that. You know what came with it? Peace. Because others chose not to go that direction. And because of that, they didn't even apply to camp. So over this last trial, their child did not get a chance to come to camp and fellowship with everybody else over that. I go, is that really worth it? It's not for me. You can care what the truth is on that, trying to figure it out. You know, this society finally has come down to the point where in this state they relaxed the restrictions. I'm grateful for that. I don't know what's all behind that. But I certainly can't waste my time digging and diving and figuring that out, because what is. The decisions are going to be made. We've got to figure out how do we handle that. And what kind of impact is it having on you and your attitude? And it wasn't, from that point, it wasn't that easy. John chapter 8. Let's go back to John 8. We'll close here. John chapter 8. John 8 and verse 31, John 8 verse 31, Jesus said to the Jews who believed on him, if you continue in my word, then you indeed are my disciples, and you know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Because ultimately it doesn't matter, does it? If you take your last breath understanding, knowing, believing, and following the truth, everything is going to be just fine. You'll be resurrected in that first resurrection. What a time it will be. Let's go to Revelation chapter 17 as we close here. Revelation chapter 17 and verse 12. This is going to happen. It would be interesting. As far as things are going, I'll throw up my speculation here. It seems that things are going and picking up so fast that this time might be in our lifetime. It seems, but we've thought that before too. I can't say for sure, but it causes us to maybe watch and pray a little bit more closely as we watch the progression of these things and to see how fast the world has gone down, how fast the society is decaying and getting worse. This will happen. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings. Now, we've looked at that. Remember, we were watching so close. Remember, it was called the Common Market. I look back at that and smile because we were watching. Ah, it's gotten to 10. Oh, it's gotten to 12. Well, it's supposed to be 10. Well, there's got to be two that leave then. So we're all throwing all these guesses. Now it's 15. Now it's 20. Well, how's this going to happen? Does that make that irrelevant? No. Now we think it could possibly be divisions of Europe with leaders. We don't know, but we are watching. Because the truth is, this will take place. We just don't know how. It causes some people to give up. Well, that's not right. That's a bunch of baloney there. Because look where we're at. No, it's still going to happen. They've received no kingdom yet, but receive power as kings for that 1 hour, which we understand to be a short time, with the beast. So you'll have this spiritual leader combined with a physical leader, just as you've had before. In that Roman Empire, when you had the Pope and you had a king and you had all the finagling and all the evil that was taking place at that time, people will buy this. They'll want to buy into this because it'll look good. We know opposite. These have one mind, will give their power and strength to the beast. These will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And look at this. Those who are with him are called and chosen and faithful. This is our time because of the truth. And we will have that opportunity to give that truth to everyone else who God will open up their minds to as well. But there's going to be a battle. And there's a battle going on right now. And we're being sharpened for this battle. Those who are faithful are those who have donned God's spiritual armor, those who have conquered deception and lies, those who have resisted temptation and have deflected Satan's fiery arrows. Will you be one of the called, chosen, and faithful? what's your gut tell you now? We better have our loins girt with truth. We better be wearing the whole armor of God.